how tariffs are affecting Maine businesses. The trade wars escalated last spring when the Trump administration imposed tariffs on Canadian, Mexican, and European steel and aluminum. In turn, Canada and the EU imposed tariffs on a number of U.S. goods, including maple syrup and ketchup. Then it was China's turn, with Trump imposing a 10% tariff on goods from China. China retaliated, and now President Trump says that tariff will go up to 25%. I'm Jennifer Rooks. For Maine companies that are involved in international trade, it has all been a bit head-spinning. Some of those companies are hard hit. Others support the tariffs. What about your workplace? Are the tariffs affecting business or planning for the future? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maine's economy is feeling the effects of the ongoing trade war between the U.S. and other countries. Today, we'll learn about those impacts that tariffs are having on Maine businesses and how companies are adapting or trying to adapt for the future. Joining me in the studio, Sheila Adams, who is Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Maine Coast, a worldwide distributor of North American lobster. Kathy Leonard is President, CEO, and owner of Auburn Manufacturing, an industry leader in the manufacture of advanced textiles for extreme heat environments. And Wade Merritt is president of the Maine International Trade Center. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you a business owner in Maine who's been affected by tariffs? Do you have questions about prices of consumer products? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you. And Wade, I'm going to have you start by giving us a little bit of a primer here. Explain what Maine's primary imports and exports are, and give us a sense of how Maine's export market is doing overall. It's up a great deal in the last decade, isn't it?
It is up a great deal. I mean, I think that our international trade work in Maine, it tends to follow the state's economy, right? So I don't think there's any big surprise that our number one export is the lobster industry, which is why we've got Sheila sitting here at the other end of the desk. But we've also do things like forest products, which again should probably be no big surprise to people, but also things like electric machinery, machines that make things. So this is kind of niche manufacturing, and also a fair amount in the textiles and materials, which is why we've asked Kathy to be here today, because she's got a great story. But that tends to be the story of the Maine economy and Maine exporters in general is small niche manufacturing, kind of backfilled by the traditional strengths of the Maine economy.
Explain to us how the tariffs have affected Maine products. I know that it's sort of an unfolding story, but bring us up to date.
It, very much so, an unfolding, a slowly unfolding story, I think, is probably the best way of putting it. I think that, where this all began, and I was on with you back in April, we were talking about this very much in the almost theoretical, because at that point, it hadn't really affected anything in Maine quite yet. I think we were still talking about the potential for steel and aluminum tariffs, which were announced right about that time. Following that, we went through a couple of rounds of retaliation from Canada announcing their list, the EU announcing their list, and most importantly, I think for the state in general, it was China announcing their list of products against which retaliation was going to happen. Now, what's been interesting to watch in all of this is that you're really kind of talking about a tale of two industries and how the Maine economy reacted to both sides of that. The first bit of this, so I think the first media calls, and I took eight of them, I think, within the space of about 10 days, was how is this affecting the lobster industry? Because the lobster industry was really the first one to appear in a big way on any of the retaliatory lists. There were others. There were some smaller things that were popping up for Canada, but every time that China would come out with a list, The question would be, how is it going to affect the lobster industry? Because we had spent a lot of time, and you'll hear from Sheila about the time that her company and others in the industries had spent developing the Chinese market. That's the first part of it. That was relatively narrow, but it was deep. It hit, you know, one or two companies, but it hit them hard.
Well, our number one export,
right.
And
absolutely.
Our iconic product.
And our iconic product to still not the leading international market, that's still Canada, but a market that was and is growing growing in importance and in value for Maine lobster exporters. So that was kind of the retaliatory side of it and was getting the headlines at the beginning. The kind of later in the longer story, the one that continues to unfold is the effects of the steel and aluminum tariffs on imports, because that is affecting manufacturers in a broad way, which you may not actually see in the export numbers. This is more of a manufacturing competitiveness
issue. I see. So,
but it's there.
So people who are making aircraft parts are paying more for the raw materials to make those parts.
Right. Exactly. So they're paying more for the materials that are made, that are then going into manufactured items.
Okay. Well, I want to bring the other two guests here into the conversation. Sheila, we're talking about you. We're talking about the lobster industry. Probably you've gotten a lot of publicity this year, probably not the publicity that you'd be looking for. But why don't you tell us that story that Wade started to tell about how your company decided to crack the Chinese market and how it grew its export there. I can only imagine something like fresh lobster and halfway around the world doesn't add up to an easy equation.
Right, it does. Thank you so much. You know, when my husband Tom started this company, he's been in the industry for over 35 years, but when he started Maine Coast, it was right at the advent of China starting to open up to trade. At the same time, we were seeing some of the largest catches in history coming from the Maine harvester. So two very fortuitous events came together, and we were able to capitalize on that. Culturally, China is a tremendous market because they value live seafood. So as a result, and lobsters are red, and that's very celebratory. So many things worked in our favor at the very beginning, but it was a tremendous amount of investment. So in the early days of the company, many trips to China, you know, we have people on staff that speak the language and have lived in the country. So we invested a tremendous amount in order to truly align with our customers. And we've made very good friends there. They're a fantastic culture, and they really do treasure what we have to offer. MITSI, or the Maine International Trade Center, was tremendous help for us as we were starting to go into those markets, supporting us with trade missions. And so it was really just a tremendous amount of focus. And just the sheer population of China alone, obviously, they can consume a tremendous amount of any product that they choose. So really, we learned a lot about how to do things in volume, at capacity. And then, of course, it's very important to do it very well to make sure that the animal is in very good condition when it gets to Beijing or Shanghai or wherever it may be.
So the trade tariffs have had a very large impact on you. What is the percentage of your business that goes to China, and how has that been affected?
Yeah, I mean, the impact honestly was immediate. It was like someone flipped a switch. You know, we as a company happen to be very fortunate. We shipped 29 different countries last year. So to a certain extent, we are diversified, and you know, we feel fortunate. We continue to invest a lot in that. But the China business immediately went away. That about 40% of our business is done into Asia or Southeast Asia. And of that, probably 30% of that is directly with China. So there was a period of time where it went very, very quiet. And then it's a pretty dynamic market. So prices change. The commercial fisheries in Canada versus the United States are different. So there's lots of dynamics about product availability. And so it's turned into much more of an opportunistic buy from our Chinese customers. And we can't fault them for that. Why would they pay up to 32% more for the same product?
So they're ordering from Canada instead.
They will, and to a certain extent, you can't argue with them
right,
for doing
right.
that.
Right, but it sounds to me, I was trying to do quick math in my head, never a good idea for a radio host, but that something like 12 or 15% of your business vanished overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. So I haven't had Kathy in the conversation yet, but I want you to start, Kathy, because Auburn Manufacturing, my understanding is this is one of the great stories in Maine, how a small company has grown to do really high tech and interesting products. So give us a little background about Auburn Manufacturing before we talk about tariffs and trade.
Sure. So Auburn Manufacturing has been in business since 1979, and I started the company with a partner back then. I was just a small child, but I've grown up.
You're a prodigy.
Prodigy, yes, I like to think that way. We've always specialized in heat-resistant textiles, and I learned my trade through working at another textile mill when I moved to Maine from Florida back in the early 70s. But the products that we make were designed to replace asbestos. So they were very high temperature materials. And back in the 70s, asbestos got banned because it's a cancer causing agent. Our products are safe. They take high temperatures. And we were dependent all along on fibers that were made here in the United States. So we've been a domestic manufacturer. And that's where the technology took place, you know, for like the space shuttle technologies and so forth, you know, found their way into commercial markets, and we're one of those. So over the years, I mean, we started with one product, two people, and little by little, we've grown to...
What was your first product?
Our first product was an insulation tape.
Okay.
They're not very boring. Everything okay. I make is sort of boring.
So what else?
They just protect
from high
heat.
You all make liners for cars, right?
No, we actually don't. We make insulative materials. We make fire barriers.
We make
welding protection.
Okay.
We make fabrics that go into safety clothing for all sorts of heavy industry, including metalworking, so steel, aluminum, and those types of industries. The paper industry uses some of our products, glass making, you know, just any heavy industry uses.
And how many employees?
We have 50. We're back up to 50. We were down to 42 a couple of years ago, and we've been able to build back up after our anti-dumping case.
So this is where the story comes in.
This
is where we're going to talk about tariffs and talk about, you know, in the case of Sheila's company, China is a market.
Right.
But in the case of Auburn Manufacturing, China is a competitor that
right.
you believe was acting unfairly.
Right. And I think we proved it.
So tell us
about
the
Department of Commerce. Well, we filed an anti-dumping action in 2016 against China. We went through a process with a very prestigious law firm out of Washington that helped us do a feasibility study as to whether we would be successful filing an anti-dumping case. And they came back and said, yes, we believe you have a case. And they laid out a process for us. And it's very, very costly. It's why a lot of companies don't do it in the United States at this point, because there's a history to it. There used to be what they called the Byrd Amendment, and it allowed companies who were successful to, get some of the duties back, you know, as ways to pay for the process. That was actually negotiated out. When we joined the World Trade Organization back
okay,
in the...
Okay, so I want to back up a little bit mm-hmm. and ask you, for those who don't know what dumping is, maybe have an instinctive sense of what that means, does that mean that China is flooding the market at below-cost material?
Below the real cost in a market economy. And that is what's difficult with China, because it really is a centralized government. It is not a market economy. And you've probably heard that over the years. You know, every year they look at it and say, is China a market economy or not? And so far it's been deemed not a market economy. It's also very closed. It's hard to know what the market is. And in our specific case, the product, we were very clear because it's a small niche product. It's a very, very high temperature silica fabric. Takes up to 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And it was clear, you know, as to the, we didn't have to bring in a whole bunch of other companies to join us in this action. And it was determined after we filed the petition, after an 18-month period, that China was dumping. The duty that was assigned was anywhere from 200 to 300% onto Chinese silica
so
fabrics.
So your product going that way would have had a 200 to 300%.
No, the product coming from China into the United States has now been assigned a duty of anywhere from 200 to 300%, and that was determined by how much the subsidies were that China was putting onto their product. Our competitors in China, okay, so that might be a small company making the same product, was actually buying everything from a state-owned enterprise. Okay, so a state-owned enterprise is owned by the government. And so the government was selling their product to the manufacturer, and the manufacturer was only finishing it, basically. And then there are a bunch of subsidies that Chinese companies get that we don't get for exporting. So as long as that product is going to the United States, is exported to the United States, there's all sorts of rebates. They get rebates for advertising, for doing trade shows, for locating in an industrial park. There's like 27 subsidies, and we learned a lot from this activity as well. And so by the time it gets here, the company doesn't have to be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
They make their money off the subsidies. And that's what we knew that, because we're like, look, this stuff isn't cheap. These are expensive items. It's not apparel. You're not just sewing a shirt. It's about, fiber technology. It's about a lot of infrastructure that it takes to make these products. You don't just, you can't sell them. What they found in our market, in the U.S. market, is that the Chinese products were selling anywhere from 37% below our price up to 67% below our price.
So when you hear the president say that he's imposing 10% tariffs on China, you think that's not even close to
what? Not even close. No, 10% is a pittance. And I don't think it has changed the market in our products. There's a lot of products like ours, where high temperature resistant fabrics coming in from China still. And they generally get a 6 or 7% duty. But so now it's maybe 17% because fiberglass was included in this last tranche, they call them. Of duties, but that hasn't been a showstopper. And if it goes to 25%, maybe that's significant. We'll see.
We're learning so much.
Yeah.
And we have to take a break. When we come back, your comments and questions, we're talking about tariffs, their effect on Maine companies. If you'd like to give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Our email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Penobscot Financial Advisors, who believe everyone deserves a fiduciary. Learn more at penobscotadvisors.com. By Otelco, formerly OTT Communications. From phones to fiber, serving Maine businesses for more than a century. Otelco.com. And Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, committed to driving transformation for a healthier future for the people of Maine. Anthem.com.
After the NRA tweeted, "Self-important anti-gun doctors should stay in their lane," trauma surgeon Joseph Sacharin started the Twitter handle, "This Is Our Lane," which has mobilized doctors around the issue of gun safety. Sacharin decided to become a trauma surgeon after being shot in the neck when he was 17. We'll talk with him on the next Fresh Air.
You can listen to Fresh Air this evening at 7 on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is a media sponsor of Beyond the Pedestal, Isamu Noguchi, and the Borders of Sculpture, on exhibit through January 6th at the Portland Museum of Art. The show features sculptures and works on paper by Noguchi, the Japanese-American artist who became a central figure in the development of 20th century American modernism. Maine Public members are eligible for 15% off tickets for the exhibition. For details, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the impact on tariffs on Maine businesses. Joining me in the studio, Kathy Leonard, who is owner of Auburn Manufacturing, Wade Merritt, president of the Maine International Trade Center, and Sheila Adams, vice president of sales and marketing for Maine Coast. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet @MaineCalling or post to our Facebook page. Wade, if you're listening to this program and you don't have a business, but you're a consumer, we all are consumers. Are we, as consumers in Maine, feeling the impact of the tariffs?
I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about that. Obviously, the U.S. is importing a lot of imports a lot of consumer goods from China, and obviously we're hitting the holiday season. This was going to be the time when people were doing it. I've certainly seen it in the press, people talking about whether this was going to depress holiday sales or anything like that. I don't know that I've actually seen any numbers on it yet. But again, I think really where we're seeing it or where I'm hearing about it really has been mostly from the small business community and from the manufacturing community.
Let me ask you about planning for the future. Mm. As we talked about at the very beginning, this is an unfolding story. What advice are you giving the companies who work with Maine International Trade Center about how to navigate this changing tariff environment?
Yeah, and I remember you asked me how we were going to answer that question back in April, and we weren't really sure. I mean, we at that point were thinking, well, maybe this isn't going to happen, and cooler heads are going to prevail. And but now, you know, there are a couple of fairly arcane programs that a small group of manufacturers, not anybody affected by the steel and aluminum tariffs, might be able to use. But I think just sort of the overall message that we're continuing to give the companies is you got to stay in the game. It's very much like, you know, more easily said than done at times, but it's kind of like what we were telling people in the depths of the financial crisis in 2009 of the companies that were successful in that were able to find a way to stay in it through the storm. And that's, you know, as I said, easier said than done. I'm not the one trying to make a payroll at one of these companies, but if there's a way to do it, because Sheila mentioned it when she was talking about how Maine Coast kind of built their companies, a lot of the stuff is relationship built, and you are dealing with price, and yes, that's important, but some of these things are the relationships that the companies have established with their foreign buyers. That is a basis from which to continue to grow, or at least be able to keep it at a low boil, so that when better days come, you're ready to get back
intended.
Into it again. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and Sheila, since you mentioned
my high-temperature fabric person.
I'm
sorry. Oh, yeah, lobster, too.
Lobster boiling.
Sorry.
Come on.
Well, but Sheila, what are you doing now as you look forward to the year ahead and you see that in January the tariff may go to 25%? Are you focusing on other markets?
Yes. The answer is kind of everything, right? I would say one thing that we've learned through this process is, and if you look over history at the lobster industry, resilience is a theme. This industry has survived many evolutions, hundreds and hundreds of years, right? So resilience is a theme inside of the company as well as inside the industry. So absolutely, we're looking at diversification, both in markets, whether they be geographic markets. I mean, no one's going to match the sheer buying power of China. And new markets take a while to open, so that's a long game play. Certainly, we have a very strong domestic market, and so there's a tremendous amount of focus there as well as making sure that we're servicing those customers, you know, better than anyone else, because all focus comes to domestic is the market you can control, right? No one's going to throw a tariff internal to the U.S. So that becomes very important. So both diversification as well as market expansion, and then a continued double down on markets that we know we can control that are a little bit abstracted from the tariff situation.
I've read that you have offices in York and in Boston. Have you thought about having an office in New Brunswick or Nova Scotia?
Sure, absolutely. You know, I think situations like tariffs, and, you know, and we hadn't seen any major chains in tariffs for decades, right? So this is new, even generationally, it's new. And I think the industry as a whole, I think we will see the lobster industry change. You know, as we consider operations, we have great partners and customers and suppliers in Canada. You know, I think if we were to make that decision, it would be a decision that was done beyond just because it's a tariff impact, right? It would be done because it makes good material sense for the business and for the industry and to service our customers better.
Kathy, what about you? How are you planning for the future?
Well, our whole history has been based on diversification. We were constantly trying to find new products, new applications. You know, there's so many variations on a theme that you can do with textiles, whether it's the type of textile, whether it's a fabric or a narrow woven tape or a rope, or and then there's coatings that can go on the product, there's fabrication, there's all sorts of things you can do with textiles. But I want to come back to this idea of relationship building. I mean, we've built our business on relationships, and you're right, it's so important. We actually export to a lot of countries, so we're not just, you know, selling it within the United States. We sell to over 30 countries, and we sell a lot into Canada and Mexico. I've been scared to death about, you know, the NAFTA agreement when it was being, revised. We reached out to all of our customers and told them that this isn't something that we're involved in. We're just sitting on the sidelines watching this sort of thing, and that we hope they'll stick with us. And luckily, we haven't lost any business in those countries. But, it's scary when, you know, a business thrives on consistency. You know, we want to know what's going to happen. And like Sheila said, I mean, she can remember when there was ever a higher tariff on lobster, you know, and you build your business around something like that. And then all of a sudden, everything changes. And that's what's been happening. There's just been this huge tumult in the past 12, 16 months. And none of us knows exactly where it's all headed. You know, we've now got NAFTA redesigned, and it's USMCA now. It's not NAFTA anymore, by the way. But now we're looking at having a free trade agreement with Japan. We're looking at having one with the UK. It's so everything is about ready to change. Now, saying that, everything that we're worried about today might change because President Trump is meeting with the premier of China, and it could change. They might agree on getting rid of all these tariffs today. So who knows?
Well, you used the word tumult, and I wanted to ask you, Wade, does this affect companies who are not exporting now, main companies who have been thinking about it? Does it scare them away from entering the international export market?
I'm watching Kathy shaking her head.
Good question.
You know, yes, I think so. I mean, it's hard to, obviously, it's very hard to prove a negative, right? But we do at the Trade Center, we conduct several overseas trade events each year, taking groups of companies to trade shows. Both Kathy and Sheila have participated in those in the past. It does seem as though you do have to have the conversation with those companies as you are going through the recruiting process of, am I going to be able to do this? Is the global trade environment going to be, does this make sense for me given the tumult? Businesses don't like uncertainty, and small businesses who have never or have limited international experience or exposure definitely don't like uncertainty. I still think that companies are engaged. We're still obviously very busy and still working with companies to get them going overseas. But we do sense a bit of hesitancy at times, especially around the times when this is bubbling to the top of the popular consciousness.
Okay, we've been mainly talking about the China trade tariffs, but I want to ask you all if something big that's going on in the world right now is the Brexit negotiations. Has that affected your business, what's going on with the EU and with Brexit?
It doesn't affect our business directly, but I failed to mention that we're talking about having a free trade agreement with UK sometime in the future when they recover from Brexit. So it could be new opportunities, but really, who knows? It hasn't affected our business at all. But in Europe has its own products like ours that are, you know, been in place for some time. So it's not a huge market.
A huge market, yeah, of opportunity for you.
No.
But Europeans love lobster. They love Maine lobster. How is this affecting you?
They do. The Brexit doesn't have a tremendous impact yet, but I agree, you know, with Kathy in that I think it could create opportunity should we go to a free trade agreement, because that would then put us potentially at a tariff advantage over our partners to the north, who also sell the same product into
How
the EU.
Active are each of you outside of your big activity, the court case and that you won, But on a day-to-day basis, month-to-month basis, how active are you all politically? Do you call our congressional delegation? Do you call folks in different agencies in the government and say, think about this when you're writing this? Or are you too busy running a business to do that?
I would say from our perspective, it's changed a tremendous amount just in the past 6 to 9 months, where now we're very active and more proactive than we've ever been before. I would say the lobster industry as a whole has been very proactive with our delegation. We've met with them. The USTR came here to Portland this summer. We were down in Washington, D.C., and we're in front of everyone in the delegation back in September. And so certainly they understand it. They understand the issues very well. They are working very hard to affect any change that they can that they think will positively impact Maine.
I've been very active since the 2000s in trying to understand what trade agreements were doing, how they were affecting our business. And I actually volunteered to serve on a Department of Commerce committee called, they're called the Industry Trade Advisory Committees. I think there are 14 of them representing various types of industries, whether it's agriculture or metals and, you know, so forth. But I'm on the textile and footwear advisory committee. And I joined that back in, I think it was 2011, because President Obama wanted more small business people to get involved in those committees rather than lobbyists. And so I said, hey, I'm only an hour flight away. Why not? You know, and I'm going to learn about this. So I joined up then, and I've been on the textile committee since then. And it's been very, very, very enlightening. And it gives me so I know a lot more about trade agreements than anyone than I ever wanted to know. You know, let's put it that way.
We'll go to Joe, who's calling from the Mid-Coast. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to, you had asked a question about are people in the public feeling the effects of the tariffs, and I work in a pretty large retail operation, a hardware store in the Mid-Coast, and we've got several hundred thousand products on our floor, and we're in the process of repricing over half of them, all increases because of the tariffs.
Joe, give me a sense of what kind of products you're seeing the prices go up, and by how much?
Well, it's a hardware store, so there's metal in many of the products, everything from power tools to fasteners to, you know, different things for the household, both for do-it-yourselfers and for contractors. And the prices are going up anywhere from a few cents to, for large ticket items, several dollars. So it's not a major increase, but it's directly related to the increased prices that we're seeing from our suppliers.
Well, Joe, thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it. We'll also go to Claire, who's calling from Appleton. Hi, Claire. Go ahead.
Hi there. Hey, my question is how the panelists overall feel about the tariffs, because it sounds like the manufacturing facility was able to put together a legitimate case, granted at great expense, to go through a process to dispute the dumping from Chinese competitors. So far, it seems from the panelists that the tariffs aren't actually working for Maine, really the whole country, because China's going to go build those relationships with other suppliers. And then when the tariffs shift or the political climate changes, they'll have that new relationship with another firm in another country. So...
okay, yeah. I'll put that back to Kathy. Go ahead.
Well, this is what I think about. I think the tariffs that are being put on by China are very strategic. And the ones that we've put on are fairly strategic, but they're affecting the consumer market most of all in the United States. And, you know, the fact is, we outsourced most of our, you know, we outsourced a lot of our manufacturing. Maybe it isn't most of it, but it's a lot of it over the last two decades. And we are a consumer economy. 70% of our GDP is consumer spending. Okay. Manufacturing is down to about, I think, 11% of GDP. And so we have taken, we've hollowed out the United States, American, you know, our manufacturing base. And so it is painful at this point for us to have to pay more for all of these things that we've come to be dependent upon. They're just not available. A lot of things just aren't available in the United States. And that's the biggest problem we face right now. Mm-hmm. And there is no easy answer for that. You know, there's no quick fix except to lift the tariffs.
Right. And Claire, I'm sort of reading between the lines here. Is part of your question that, do you think it might be better for the nation to crack down on dumping than to raise tariffs? Is that kind of where you're coming from?
No, not at all. I see what the previous system had, a clear process, and Kathy was able to follow that process to defend her product. But now we have on the other end the lobster fisheries, where, you know, China's going to go elsewhere. And it's a commodity. You know, a lobster's a lobster. So that's really actually my perspective, is it was working, and negotiation and having a process to solve disputes seems reasonable. And now we're having a trade war that's not really working so great. You know, those soybean farmers, China is turning on their own farms to be filling that gap, as well as obviously going to much larger places like Brazil and Venezuela.
Sure, Claire. We need to go to a break, and I do want to talk about farming when we come back from that break. But before that, did you want to respond again?
Oh, I just want to make clear that we're really the exception. My company taking an anti-dumping case is very, very unusual, because the cost is tremendous, and it's all on the back of the business itself or the industry. Our government does not subsidize that one bit, nor do we enjoy the duties that are now being placed on the products when they come back in. So it's one of those, it's a decision that we made, but a lot of companies just can't do it.
Don't have that option. Claire, thank you for your call. And I do want to talk about farming after the break. We do need to take a break. And tomorrow's show, we want to bring up, we are talking with a Maine author who has written a new book about termites. I'm in the middle of it. It's fascinating, I promise. Email your comments and questions to talk@mainepublic.org. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Portland Ovations, presenting the innovative Dover Quartet, December 6th at Hannaford Hall. Learn more at portlandovations.org. And St. Mary's Health System Orthopedics, helping patients live their best lives in motion. Online at findabonedoctorme.org.
5 years ago, people flocked to Watford City, North Dakota, to work the oil boom. Today, the crude is still flowing, and now entire families are settling in.
Our town is booming. Our main street is full. You don't go through little towns and see every storefront have a business in it. We do.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, a town transformed, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening.
Coming up in Reporting Women with Mibis Doucette on the BBC World Service. We're debating what women want from the media with three of the BBC's women's affairs journalists. We're discussing what stories women around the world want us to cover.
You have women who have been able to break through traditionally male-dominated areas, but we don't hear enough of their stories.
This BBC special is coming up today at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, how tariffs are affecting Maine companies. Joining me today, Wade Merritt with the Maine International Trade Center, Sheila Adams with Maine Coast, and Kathy Leonard with Auburn Manufacturing. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Wade, before we went to a break, the caller was talking about American soybeans. So we've heard a lot of reporting from the American Midwest about how soybean growers, corn growers are being really very much affected by these tariffs, and how even the federal government has had to create some stabilization funding. Have we seen much of an impact on the agriculture sector here in Maine, both from the tariffs, or are they recipients of this funding?
So they were not recipients of these funding. This was I actually did sit in on the call with USDA because I wanted to see if there was a play here for our we call them agriculture, even though they don't grow in the ground, our friends in the lobster industry. But there's I think the bottom line is that the programs that were announced by USDA to support the crops were really expansions of existing programs that were already kind of in place to benefit the Midwest farmers. And we're talking about oil seeds and corn, like you said, hogs, not really the kind of small-scale agriculture that we see here in Maine. It did not affect the blueberry industry. It did not affect the potato industry, which, of course, would be our kind of two major agricultural crops in the state.
Okay. What about Maine's boat-building industry? How has it been affected by all of this?
They seem to be okay as well. I think, you know, the biggest effect on the state's economy from all of this, I'm coming at this from the retaliatory side, from, you know, what China put in place against American exports. Of course, they will also be affected by steel and aluminum tariffs. But on the, as far as on the export side, China was a difficult market to get into for pleasure craft. Most times, if you're selling a pleasure craft to a Chinese buyer, they're actually home porting it in Indonesia or Thailand or someplace else because there are restrictions on the amount on boats actually in China. So we already weren't selling a whole lot there. We were selling them to other countries to the extent that they were. And that does not seem to have been affected.
So the European tariffs and the Canadian tariffs haven't affected Maine's
right.
boat
so the European industry. The European tariffs were suspended after there was an agreement that we were going to talk about, you know, the issues underlying our, you know, basically we decided to kick the can down the road a little bit between the U.S. and the EU. And for Canada, the boat building industry was not on the list. It was not on the list of potential industries that were affected.
Now, Kathy, earlier we were talking about how you believe the Chinese tariffs are really kind of a drop in the bucket. But I want to clarify, you still are not in favor of a trade war.
Absolutely not. No.
You don't like this, how
no.
this is all going down.
Can't we all just get along? You know, but I do think we've been going down this road for a long time with our free trade agreements. And just like the Canadian, you know, the NAFTA, it probably did need some tweaking. It was 24 years old, I believe. And okay. But, you know, that could have been done in a much more civilized manner years ago. I think it's an indication of the polarization of our political place here in the United States right now, where we are. We're just not dealing with issues as they come along. And trade has been a problem. These free trade agreements have been hard on American manufacturing overall. Like I say, it really caused a lot of companies to just go offshore and make things offshore and then just bring them back and, you know, reap the benefit of that. And we lost 5 million manufacturing jobs in this country since the early 2000s. That's had a huge effect on the wealth in this country. And, you know, these folks no longer had benefits. They didn't have good jobs. It has had an effect. And I think we're seeing that now. So free trade agreements in and of themselves are not a huge problem, but it's the workings of some of them and the lobbying that was done on some of these items that, you know, have caused us problems over the years and have, you know, it little by little, it has hurt our economy.
Do you have something to add to that, Sheila, as you think about this in the long term?
Yeah, you know, I think it remains to be seen. I think that the impact will be larger the longer this goes. I think as an economy in Maine, we've been pretty resilient. I think the community is pretty scrappy. We have lots of small businesses, and I think, you know, they figure a way. But I think as we look over the long term, retaliatory tariffs really don't solve the problem. At some point, people have to get across the table from each other, get resolution to the real issue behind it, and then move forward. Because I do think if we sort of sit on the sidelines, that we do run the risk, as the earlier caller had said, that other relationships will form. And so if we pull ourselves out of the global economy, coming back into that global economy, I think is a challenge. And I think we just want to be smart about what we do. I certainly support the interest and, you know, and what as a country we're trying to accomplish in terms of, you know, some of these agreements are very old. I think there's some very poor behavior happening because of these agreements. And I think some of that does need to be corrected. And as a country, we'll be stronger for it. However, it's the mechanism or the approach that's being taken that maybe we could do something different.
Is part of the problem not the not just the agreements themselves, but also enforcement of them?
Yes. Customs and Border Protection was, I believe, underfunded for quite some time. They're trying to build it up now. But they, as I understand it, they only inspect maybe 2% of all the containers that come in. It's just not enough. And but they are trying to beef it up a little bit. So, you know, we're making perhaps a little progress on that front.
Wade, you get asked this a lot. What is the long-term prognosis for Maine companies as you look forward to the unfolding trade war, hopefully coming to an end soon, trade war?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm still very bullish on the international economy for Maine companies. For, you know, you've heard some two really good stories today from two very good companies that do very different things. That has been the story for years. I've been working with the Trade Center. I started out as basically a glorified intern 21 years ago and kind of watching how all of this has evolved over time. And to be honest, the fundamentals have not changed. I mean, we were talking then about, you know, 95% of your consumers and your potential clients live outside the United States. That is an excellent potential market for growth. I think, you know, there's certainly some waves going on out there right now, but we continue to, you know, do our educational programs. We continue to consult with companies like Sheila's and Kathy's to talk with them about international markets, either the ones they're in or ones that we see potential for them to get into. You know, I still think the future is very bright in this regard. This is the thing. I was asked by another radio host on another station one time, what would we be talking about if we weren't talking about this in terms of the international trade environment? And I would say exports are up 7%.
I have that circled. I had on a piece of paper in front of me.
7%.
Despite the trade war, this year alone up 7%, Maine exports.
7%. And, you know, Maine exports are up 7%. And that is, yeah, that it would probably be the story if we were not talking about tariffs.
Yeah. In all my years in business, I've always been proud of being in the state of Maine. And I think we have a wonderful brand. People depend on our products for quality. They like our people. They were easy to deal with. You know, it's a very good brand. And let's not forget that American products in general are in demand around the world. I'm always surprised. I don't expect it because I don't think we think of ourselves like that in the United States. But we are. Our products are well respected. They respect our innovation, our ingenuity, and so forth. So we have a lot going for us. So we kind of have to rise above this, be resilient, and be ready to move quickly.
You know? Well, it's curious to me, and I'm so glad to hear you say that, Kathy, because I know people in Maine have a lot of pride about the Maine brand. But when you are working with companies in other parts of the world, they really have heard of Maine and the Maine brand.
They may not know the name, the Maine brand so much, but they do like working with us. They like working with small companies like us, and they believe in the American, you know, American products. And so, yeah, and when they come here to visit, they're thrilled. They all want to come back.
And do they still prefer a Maine lobster to a lobster, a North American lobster?
That's always going to be and it depends. But yes, I think, you know, to echo what Kathy was saying is when we travel around the world, other countries absolutely believe that the quality of the product that comes from these North American waters, these North Atlantic waters, are of higher quality. Food safety is a big deal in the rest of the world. We don't think about it here because we just have never had to worry about it. But you start to go into Southeast Asia, that is a major concern. And as we start to see these emerging middle classes in many of these Southeastern Asian countries, that becomes very, very important to them. If they can secure a very safe food source for their family, that is very important to them. So I agree with Wade. You know, it is there. They value it. So we just have to find our way.
So Wade, I'm going to end with this. Who's next? What companies are out there in Maine that are not tapping the international market? Is there a certain type of company that this field, this potential is very ripe for?
Well, I think it's everybody. I hate to answer that question. I'd love to say, well, here's my list of like six or seven different companies. But I mean,
well, maybe not companies, but fields, right. Like manufacturing, fields, seafood.
Absolutely. Manufacturing, still very strong for us. And I am constantly floored by, after this many years of doing this work, how many times I can go out into the field all over Maine and find some companies that are doing some amazing things, you know. Small manufacturers that are up in the woods in Piscataquis County that are, you know, shipping to 25 different countries, and you didn't know that they were there because they kind of keep that low profile. So, I mean, the companies that we are really looking for are those kind of small niche manufacturers that are working in spaces like Kathy's, or working in, you know, the defense industry, or working in the boat building industry. And then, of course, our natural resource-based companies are also finding great success. The seafood industry, Sheila mentioned, we've done a lot of work with Maine Coast, but also other companies in that space. I still think there's a lot of room for us to grow in value-added food, whether it's seafood or just kind of more traditional products. And one place I think you'll start to see us, the Trade Center, starting to appear a little bit more in is in this kind of new forest products sector, as those technologies start to develop and as some of those companies start to develop their own markets. It's still probably a little early for us, but I think, you know, we'll be there to work with them on that too.
Okay, reading this statistic from your own material here. Last year, 2,262 Maine companies exported $2.7 billion in goods and services to 176 countries. If that number is $2.7 billion today, what is the potential? What could it be?
Oh, well, I think, you know, we may actually see $3 billion again this year, based on that 7% growth, if that holds up. I think, you know, 3.5-4 is probably not crazy if, you know, people start to really to get in on this, and that's just based on kind of national average of what states export as a percentage of what they manufacture. I think there's definitely room to grow there.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here. That was Wade Merritt, the president of the Maine International Trade Center. Sheila Adams also here, vice president of sales and marketing for Maine Coast, a worldwide distributor of North American lobster, and Kathy Leonard, president and owner of Auburn Manufacturing, a leading manufacturer of advanced textiles. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. We had production help from Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.